The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Okay, you're very welcome back to the program. Good morning if you are just joining us. Okay, let us get to some of your comments coming in so far this morning. Funny day, Minister for the Health, there was only three waiting in ED. Well, do you know what? Facts matter. So I thought I'd run through the list for you. So you're quite correct. There were three on trolleys on the 24th, which is Friday, isn't it? Three waiting a bed. The Friday beforehand, it was 26. So it went from 26 to 3. But the Friday before that, it was 2. And the Friday before that, it was 4. And the Friday before that, in October, it was 7. 6 the Friday before that, 7 the Friday before that, and 25 on the 6th of October. Okay, so in fairness, sometimes it can be very high on a Friday, but also, and as I say, we have to be fair, and it's about facts here, quite often it seems on a Friday, 6, 7, 7, 4, 2, and 3. The figures can be quite low on a Friday morning as well. So as I say, facts are important, and those are the facts. It's been quite high on a couple of Fridays, but ordinarily it seems it's in the single digits or low single digits. I listened to the interview with the minister on Friday. He definitely had all his homework done and was well briefed on what questions he might be asked. Unfortunately, despite your best efforts, he managed to skirt important issues with a plethora of statistics. Healthcare and medicine is a complex issue. I think it would be better if the minister was interviewed by you in the company of a consultant or doctor who wouldn't be blindsided by statistics. Well, my job as an interviewer is not to land punches or to catch him out or whatever. The minister is entitled to his interpretation of statistics without them necessarily being argued by a consultant who would be not inclined to take part in that interview, as he said anyway. So as an interviewer, I get stuff on the record. He was meeting with GPs and consultants after the fact. There's basic questions that, you know, are important to us as it relates to funding, getting procedures, getting certain, being able to see certain consultants and all that type of stuff. So I take your point, but he was able to tease that out with consultants and GPs after the fact. Minister, visit, is it genuine? Is it speech play, asks another listener. Is it pre-election preparation for upcoming funding announcements to keep seats in Donegal for Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil? Keep guessing, but the terrible situation where consultants must organise to feedback about the lack of management and resources is a testament to the mismanagement by HSE and government. Another, is Dr. O'Rourke suggesting that the excellent CT scan service for cancer service sufferers providing after hours in LUH should be done away with? For risk scans, short-term solutions like NTP are a godsend for sick people. Hospitals need to look at the process in ED to see where it can be improved, because it is shocking. That's the one area I do expect to see a more positive experience. Going into ED is never easy. It's never going to be an in-and-out job unless you're lucky. But I think there's certain things that hopefully can be done now to improve that situation and to give people more confidence about going to the ED. Because it's a fine hospital in many, many areas. When you get in, the staff are amazing. They work so hard under such difficult circumstances. So if we can get that part of it right, get the ambulances in and out quick, you know, I think we're on a pathway maybe that might improve patients' confidence in the facility. Bring Dr. O'Rourke back on. I never heard as much sense. He should be running that hospital, says a listener. Let me see, more coming in, of course. Hi, Greg. The doctor says Letterkenny is a revolving door and people leave as soon as they come in. I'm curious why that would be. It seemed he was going to say, but didn't. Well, I think he did say, because what he was suggesting is that in the absence of certain diagnostic tools. So in other words, if I go to my GP and I'm suffering a severe headache, right, the GP may presume that maybe I've got, maybe I've got eye strain or something, or I've got a sore neck and the pain's shooting up and into my head and paracetamol's not really working for it. Now, the GP might believe that that is what it is, but he also needs to make sure that it's not something more sinister. He can't diagnose that there. He's not going to take a chance with my well-being, so he's going to send me into the ED just to be sure. So I might then be admitted, get a couple of scans, hopefully everything's okay, and then I go home the next day. And that's the revolving door. Whereas if you know, suspected ankle breaks or whatever were seen in a different facility other than ED, like a medical assessment unit, well, then I wouldn't be admitted to get my ankle checked and then released. I'm mixing up examples, but that's, from my understanding, what the doctor meant by a revolving door, that for diagnostics, people are going in, everything's okay, thankfully, and then they're sent home, but they have to be admitted for some of those diagnostic services, whereas we could have a different facility that would relieve that. If I understand correctly, that's what he meant by the revolving door. If he's listening or someone close to him is listening and it's something else, I'm more than happy to correct the record as well. Just pick up on your comment there, Greg, about cosmetic work as if it allowed before a minister's visit. The hospital don't agree with you there on that point. Where did the money come from to get these painters in? Should that work not have been done right in the first place, i.e. minister coming to visit to get the place looks bad done before he comes? I get your point we're saying. I'm just saying it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't shock me. I'm sure if we had someone important visiting here, you know, we'd tidy the place up a bit. I think that's understandable, but we can agree to disagree. Why is it now all GPs are sending everyone to the ED, even for stitches? Thanks to all those GPs who are working hard for the people of Donegal on our behalf to fix our hospital. Right, okay, I read that one. Hobby saying he's switching over to ITV last week to watch a programme beginning at 8 p.m. Coronation Street was still on and it was portraying a stabbing between students at a school and other students on their phones recording it. All this before the watershed. It's a dangerous situation that children tuned in believing this is the norm. Well, that's an ongoing storyline and it's quite a difficult storyline about bullying and peer pressure in schools. And those stories play out not in one episode, but over multiple episodes. I find an awful lot of those when they try and tackle an issue, it's box ticking, you know, because they do it in consultation with various groups and they go through the obvious things that you see and the obvious outcomes. But if anyone who's watching it on a consistent basis, especially students, I think it might give younger people an opportunity to say, you know, that's happening to me. I'm being threatened at school. And eventually the bully's going to get his comeuppance. So there's a message there as well. As I said, I'm just happened to be privy to that storyline. And if you switched in and out, maybe that's how you would see it. But I think it's trying to tackle young people who are being bullied both in person and online, unable to speak to parents. And as I say, I presume it's going to play out in a positive way for the victim of that. And don't forget to mention the Late Late Show. Did Patrick do us proud? It was brilliant. Didn't get to see it yet. I'm actually proper delighted that Patrick Kilty knocked it out of the park. There would have been huge pressure on him. Everybody loved it. There were some fantastic characters. I did see clips of it, though I haven't seen it all. And I'm delighted. It brings joy to people. It would have been a tough one for him. And I think he did great by the testimonies that I'm reading. Oh my God, had to turn off RTE News. Simon Harris is all talk about riots in Dublin and not one mention of the government allowing in unvetted people in to attack and stab our children. We see the problem is the reason he's not going to say that, and I'm not here to defend anyone, but the person who is suspected of being responsible for that is an Irish national. You know, maybe weren't born here, as many of us weren't, but he was not an unvetted immigrant. I'll come back to more of that comment in a moment, but we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to hear more speculation as to, we were talking about this to John McAteer last week, that Charlie McConnell Logue, maybe he's not going to be seeking your vote. Maybe he is the next EU commissioner. We'll tease all that out for you after we take this break. Stay right where you are. You're welcome back to the programme. We're joined on it now by John Lee, the executive editor of the Daily Mail Group in Ireland. John, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am doing good. Now, there has been some ongoing speculation linking Agriculture Minister Charlie McConnell to an EU commissioner's job. And I think he was asked the question early this month, maybe around the 7th or 8th, if he was ruling himself out of it or if he saw it in his future or not. And he didn't rule himself out of it. So can you give us a background to this speculation and how he could end up as an EU commissioner, John?
Well, the speculation was certainly turbocharged when a man like Charlie McConnell, not known for revealing his cards too often, went away from the usual political tactic of saying, "Oh, I'm in a job now, I'm not going anywhere." So by his acceptance that he's figuring in it, one would heighten the view that he is certainly, I would say he's the number one contender, that's for sure. It comes about, with no disrespect to Mr. McConnell, but by a process of elimination, the the EU commissioner's job is one of the most sought after now in politics, not disconnected to the fact that it's a rather secure role financially. The package is extraordinary, really, when you start adding well over 300 grand a year you'll take in from tax allowances and everything else. And it does give a security of tenure also, that you'll be there for 5 years, guaranteed that if you do okay, you could be there for 10 years. There was an agreement at the outset of the government, because Fine Gael had held this role for a number of years in the coalition, that Fianna Fáil would be getting this role. And the discussion within government and without about who was to take it has gone in ebbs and flows, much like political fortunes have in that time. So if you rewind back, say, to mid-2022, when there was a lot of disquiet in Fianna Fáil, probably about Micheál Martin's leadership, unjustified as it may seem now, but that was certainly the case then. If you remember, there was meetings in Leinster House amongst his parliamentary party about what should be done with Micheál kind of stuff. It was felt that it was probably likely that he would take the EU commissioner's position. But since then, his position has solidified with the increasing possibility that Fianna Fáil could choose between Fine Gael or Sinn Féin, rather varied selection there as coalition partners. In actually, Micheál Martin is virtually guaranteed to be in a senior role. So he's gone as a potential candidate. It then moved on to Michael McGrath. We understand that Michael McGrath is not favoured by the leadership being wholly Micheál Martin, who would not want to lose his finance minister, and also a man who's very much guaranteed on a seat in the next general election. And then you go through the cabinet for various reasons. Norma Foley and Stephen Donnelly, Dara O'Brien are not, again, for electoral reasons as much as anything else, we can go into that if you want to, are not expected to be given the role. Mm-hmm. And that comes to Mr. McConlogue then, who I think will be fair, I don't think he'd deny this himself, would not exactly be nailed on at the next general election. He was elected. He was the last person elected at the general election in 2020. A good bit ahead of Patrick Gallagher, but nevertheless, it was tight for him. And next time out, there is a feeling that he could be in trouble electorally. There is also speculation, and this is not confirmed at all or discussed by Mr. McConlogue, that he may not want to run, and that there's an increasing tendency towards that in politics.
And in politics generally, I mean, obviously, as you quite rightly pointed out, particularly with the defective concrete block scandal, and a party being formed particularly for that, and potentially to the likes of Councillor Martin McDermott might be a perfect fit to run instead of Charlie McConlogue, but he is probably achieved, and I think this is not disrespectful, it's respectful, he's probably achieved everything he probably can achieve in domestic politics. So if you have an out, right, an option where you can have another high-profile, very well-rewarded role, you could argue, why would you put yourself through what will be a very, very tough general election campaign up here?
Absolutely, and you already have one recently former government minister deciding that he's not going to put himself through that or his family either. And that's, with Sinn Féin's rise also, there is a possibility that two seats there. They're talking about three. And as you say, the Micah Bricks people who have been so grievously let down by central government themselves are considering running candidates and probably will. So, and also, he's achieved a lot, but I think again, Charlie McConlogue is very well gotten by Micheál Martin, and he is almost spiritually close to him, in the sense that if you remember way back in 2011 when the party was at its lowest ebb, Charlie McConlogue was one of those, surprisingly, who gave them a bit of a boost. And he has done, it is felt, well in agriculture, which is an important role in Ireland, but our associations and relationship with Europe in a way that some countries, Germany and France, for instance, aren't as reliant on our associations through agriculture with the EU, are very high. So there would be a hope that he would then secure, if to go on, the agriculture commissioner role, which would then, at a very difficult time, when is there not a difficult time for Irish farming, but particularly now with talk of reduction of national herds and nitrates legislation and everything else, that he would be very well positioned for that. So I also think, beyond the personal considerations, beyond the electoral considerations, there is also an expectation and a hope that a very strong, efficient, loyal politician, loyal I mean to Micheál Martin, that is, could do well for us in Europe.
And John,
you know, it is a role.
What is the process and the timeline then? So, for instance, is this a decision that Micheál Martin himself can make? And when, if he can, or what is the process, you can tell us more about that. What is the likely timeline? Because if an election is looming, he doesn't necessarily have to wait because of the time you're allowed to hold a by-election. He doesn't necessarily have to wait for right to the day of the collapse of the government or the dissolving of the government. So what is the procedure and the timelines there, John, potentially?
Well, we probably don't have enough time, much as you and I might find it fascinating. The next year will be dominated by elections. In mid-2024, we have the local and Europeans. That's set in stone, the date for that in June. And around then, the discussion, and it's a bit loose, as a lot of things can happen in Europe, around then, in the summer, we have the new commission appointed. So we get a new, or perhaps Ursula von der Leyen may remain as EU Commission President. She then appoints a commission, and that's her cabinet, essentially. Now, they don't take up office till December 2024, but they are, the process of interviewing, if you cast your mind back to Phil Hogan, was our last appointee and had to stand down, that process begins in the summer. So the government will need, our government will be needing to let the commission know, and things move slowly there, who our candidate is by the latest, really, March of next year. So it'll have to be decided very much by then. The decision really is one man's, and that's Micheál Martin's. Politics may be democratic in political parties, but on a decision like this, it's the leaders. But then it gets even more complicated because, as we say, we have the local and Europeans. There's increasing belief that Leo Varadkar, who will ultimately have the decision, will want to go to the country in as early as September next summer. Sorry, September after the summer. Sometime between September and November. I'm not 100% on that. But legally, then, they can roll round to March. If in that period a cabinet minister, a TD, is appointed, say, December, and that could be after a general election, of course, but will have been nominated at that stage and ratified. But if in that period there was a general election after that TD, say Charney McConnell, became EU commissioner, there wouldn't be a necessity for a by-election because there's a six-month law now. So really, say he took up the role, resigned his seat in autumn, before or after a general election, there wouldn't be then a need for a by-election.
Would that be advantageous to John as well? Because it depends on what they want to do. I really would not be surprised to see Pat the Cope Gallagher back in the frame again. He's removed somewhat from what's happened. Yeah, exactly. He's removed somewhat from what's happening in the north of the county, though it's not exclusively there, but in terms of people's attitudes. But also, too, if this 6 months would allow either a sweeper for Pat the Cope Gallagher or a main candidate to replace Charlie McConnell to campaign. So that would be an advantage to go early with this announcement too, I presume.
Absolutely. And there's still, no matter how problematic a government TD standing again in Donegal will be, there is a sizable Fianna Fáil vote there. And if you look at the numbers, Charlie McConnell himself had over 8,000 first preference votes. I think Pat the Cope wasn't far behind that, about 1,000 behind that. So that's an awful lot of votes still to play with. So yes, you could start looking at a new candidate. And I think Martin McDermott, as far as I know, had one of the highest first preference votes in the last local and European elections. That last local elections in 2019, and he then would be one of those who would emerge from the local elections with an understanding of how popular that person is. And there are other councillors too, obviously, who will come forward. But it is a pivotal election. We often say the general election is the most important we've had in a generation. But this is something. This general election, the course, our country's course, for good or bad. In the next 10 years. So every seat will matter and every person will matter and who stands will matter. And I think then if you're selecting whatever that timeline is, I'd say Micheál Martin in his private time will say to himself that he would like to see the general election go all the way to March. And that's, again, would be about what you point that allow newer candidates, if they're needed, time to become known throughout a county or throughout a constituency. And that isn't always the case if they're thrown a ticket very late. And then the public, the electors will have to decide whether they want to put Sinn Féin in government for the first time ever. You will note that they have fallen back a bit in the national polls only this weekend. And I don't think that's as nailed on as it can be. Or as people think it is, and then they have to decide the electorate. Alternatively, do they want to stick with the coalition that is there now? And that will mean every candidate counts.
All right.
More so than ever.
Fascinating, John. We're getting into that fascinating time all next year with various elections, and really interesting to get your insight. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Take care. John Lee, who's executive editor of the Daily Mail Group Ireland. And if that were to transpire, things would stop making a little bit of sense in certain areas. Okay. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000. Give us a call. You're tuned to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And it's been a busy one so far, and still plenty to come over the next wee while. So stay tuned. Okay. We are going to be joined shortly by Jason Quigley, we hope, as we talk about the fight at the weekend, but I just can't get through to him, so we might just go through trad phone lines, if that's okay. We'll get him up there. Trying to do it through WhatsApp, but it's just not working for me at the moment. I think Charlie McConnell either should go as a commissioner or else step away from politics, as his chances of getting re-elected to the next Dáil are very slim, says a caller. Another, do you want to hear a good joke? Charlie McConnell is going to be the next new commissioner. I'm not a gambling man, but I reckon the nearest he'll get to Brussels will be the Brussels sprouts on his Christmas dinner. Farmers reckon he's the worst Minister for Agriculture ever. Mary Coughlan was regarded as the best. I think there are others with different points of view. Good morning. The news about Charlie McConnell's potential EU role doesn't surprise me. It helps explain some of his apathy and lack of interest towards his constituents in regards to MICA, for example. But he needs to remember that when he eventually collects his big pension, that he'll be living among the very people that he's let down so badly by not representing him. The message yet again is that ineptitude is often rewarded in our government. Some people will see it like that, others obviously won't. But we appreciate your input there. I wonder, is Jason Quigley with me now? Are you there, Jason?
Hi, thanks.
I'm doing good. Jason, you like to predict the outcome of boxing matches. You know, with Katie going up a weight, taking on a much younger, arguably stronger, and somewhat might have thought, this is in the first fight against Chantal Cameron, and then seeing the outcome of it. Did you believe in your heart of hearts that Katie Taylor, at 37, could up her game to the extent that she did and dominate that fight like she did? Did you believe she was capable of it?
Yeah, I did, Greg, and I can say this with confidence because I actually did a prediction online before the actual fight, and I know the mindset that she has, we know how disciplined that she is, and if there's anybody that could come back and overturn a defeat, then it was Katie Taylor, and I believe that Katie Taylor had that in her, but I knew it was going to be a very difficult task for her, but I definitely knew that Katie Taylor had something special in her to pull that out of the bag, which she did.
And she was able to dig so deep and dominate for so long. And much has been made about the whether it was a knockdown or not. The reality is it would only have affected the draw side of it. She would have won even if that had been counted a knockdown, if my maths are correct.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, I wasn't very sure. The stream and the link that I had to watch the fight wasn't great. So I wasn't sure. I had to take a wee look after it, and I definitely think it was a legitimate knockdown. And as you say, you know, it wouldn't have really affected the scorecards if it had been a 10-8 round. Just depending whether the judges had Katie Taylor winning that round, it would have been 10-9 in her favour. Or it could have switched it around in a 3-point difference if it was the other way around. So it definitely is it could have been a bit of a turning point momentum-wise. Maybe not in the scoring that early in the fight, but yeah. Momentum-wise, if Katie Taylor had went down, it was called as a knockdown, then Shantan Cameron could have got a lift out of that, and that could have changed the fight momentum-wise.
And I mean, obviously, you can feel disappointed, or some will feel disappointed for Chantel, but her stock in every fight that she fights with Katie Taylor is rising, you know, to legendary status. Especially, they have to do it for a third time, and it has to be in Croke Park, doesn't it, Jason?
Yeah, I think that it should only be right for a trilogy fight in terms. I know that Katie Taylor could walk away now and be like, well, look, she beat me. I come back and beat her and sail off into the sunset. That would be great. And if Katie Taylor did that, there'd be no question about it either. But I think as fans and as boxing people, we would love to see it again. I know Chantel Cameron would definitely love to see it again, because there was a few instances in that fight. As I said, I'm going to watch this fight back. But, you know, I thought Katie used the head a lot in that fight. I thought that she did a lot of holding in that fight, which she wasn't really warned for at all throughout the whole fight. And that could have been a difference in momentum as well. So it weighs up for a very intriguing trilogy fight, but I definitely do think that has to happen again. And without a doubt, you know, imagine that being in Croke Park and finally having it in Croke Park after all the talk about it.
And she was clever too, wasn't she, in her attacks? And I know you're going to watch it back in more detail yourself, but she was in and out. She didn't get greedy. She, you know, she didn't stand there and trade. She traded cleverly, which I think really worked for her. And I think it caught Chantel out a little bit because she was being put on the back foot at times in that fight.
Yeah, I think, you know, Katie Taylor definitely did her homework, her and her team. You know, she threw her punches and she tried to get out of there. When she couldn't get out of there, she held Chantel Cameron up. She got very close and hold on to Chantel, so Chantel couldn't really, you know, let punches go or get into a rhythm. And you could see that was frustrating Chantel. You know, later on that the second half of the fight, she started to, you know, look at the referee and started to talk to the referee. And once you see a fighter doing that, you know, they're a wee bit out of sorts. They're not thinking straight on the game plan on how to win the fight. They're starting to complain and their mind taking off the performance and what is key to getting the performance. So, you know, there was a lot of things that Katie Taylor did very well in that fight. There was a lot of things Chantel Cameron did well in that fight as well. And it was a very exciting fight, you know, to be... For two women to be headlining a show in Dublin and putting on a performance in a show like they did, you know, the atmosphere was electric, which I've heard, and, you know, it was a credit to both of them. And, of course, for Katie Taylor as well, after coming through what she came through in her last fight against Chantel, you know, everybody writing her off, majority of people writing her off, and to come back and do it, it just shows how amazing she is. And also... don't want to put a downer on things, but the way that the capital has been over the last couple of days and the issues going on, it's a great lift for Ireland, and it's a great lift for the people seeing a performance like that from Katie.
There were other good performances on the night as well, and someone I wasn't overly familiar with, but will be following closely now, is Paddy Donovan.
Yeah. Paddy Donovan's a special talent. You know, Paddy's very close to me. Me and him trained together for many years now with Andy coaching us. And, you know, I've did loads of rounds with Paddy. We've trained together endless number of times now over the last couple of years. And I've always said it, and we've always known that, that Paddy's going to be top, top level. You know,
he can
go
the
whole way.
Jason, Paddy can keep... Sorry, I beg your pardon. There's a line down, Jason. I was saying he looks like a guy that could go all the way. He's got everything going for him.
100%, Greg. You know, he can, you know, he can talk. He's got the skills. He's got the talent. He's got the looks. And most importantly, Paddy can bang. You know, he has that knockout power. He has that power that if the fight's maybe not going his way, he can land that one shot and completely change the fight. So he has all the qualities of being a world champion. I believe that he can be a world champion. Paddy just needs to stay very disciplined now, you know, inside and outside the ring, work hard and be disciplined. And I believe that Paddy can go all the way and he can be Ireland's next world champion.
And just a word on Gary Cully as well. He, I suppose... you would hope that he got rid of the demons of his last performance. He took on a tough fight. He's not a fighter. I don't enjoy watching him. And I'll tell you the reason why. It's not because he's a bad boxer or whatever. He's just so tall. His head's in the air. And now, as a viewer, you're waiting for him to get clipped. Thankfully, it didn't happen for him on Saturday night. But he also has great potential. But would you see he's got a bit of work to do in his defence, in his style, or maybe at that weight?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be very tricky for Gary because, you know, a lot of people are saying, should he move up? A lot of people are saying that, you know, he's far too big for the weight, which he looks like he is far too big for the weight, and he does look drawn in and, you know, drained out at the weigh-ins. But for any fighter to get in with a man at his weight and that size is going to be a very, very difficult night for him. And yes, Greg, what you were saying, you know, he had a lot of demons, and this was a massive fight, you know. Gary was on a massive pedestal going into his last fight. He was the next big star coming out of Ireland, and he got knocked out in the Three Arena on the Katie Taylor undercard. And he went back to the same arena, to the same undercard, and he went in there against another very good opponent in Reese Mould. You know, he's been doing great things over in the UK and making a name for himself.
He took a 50-50 so fight, which he didn't have to, did he, Jason? He didn't have to take a 50-50.
Yeah, well... 100%. You know, that was definitely. I would have gave Gary the edge in that before the fight. But you know, it definitely was a lot of people looking at it as a 50-50 fight. But you know, Gary showed and proved to everybody else and himself. Most importantly, that fight was all about showing himself and proving to himself that he still got it, that he can get over those demons, and it's all about now moving forward. And having that confidence and just looking back as that fight that he got knocked out in as a learner.
Yeah, all right, okay. Listen, though, it was Katie Taylor's night. She is just something else, and she's up there with the greats in Irish sport, not just boxing, because she transcends the support. And a quick word on the Rumble in the Hills, a huge success, Jason, for the first show you put on in Letterkenny. You happy with how it went, and here's to more?
Yeah, without a doubt, Greg, you know, it turned out fantastic. You know, you have always doubts and worries about these things whenever you're putting them on, but as soon as the night started, the fights were top quality, the crowd was top quality, the atmosphere was brilliant, and here's to many more Rumble in the Hills in the future.
All right, listen, Jason, thanks so much for that. Great to chat to you. That's Jason Quigley there, pro boxer, of course, promoter as well, and... organiser of great events. All right, listen, brilliant stuff. Greg, I was discharged at 10 past 3 in the morning, got home at 4, got a phone call at 4:30 to tell me to go back ASAP because I shouldn't have been discharged. I'm sorry to hear that. Hope everything goes okay for you. Good morning, Greg. Charlie for the EU Commissioner. Are we having a laugh? This is a man who puts up so-called strong arguments for Ireland, yet no one in Europe listens to him. The place for Charlie is Inishowen. They believe he went on to fail. I mean, it's very, very critical of Deputy Charlie McConnell. And I don't want to read one after the other. But obviously someone who believes that he has a job to do in Donegal. Maybe he's got more power as an EU commissioner if he gets that position to contribute to a means to an end. Okay, Greg, I listened to your interview with Stephen Donnelly. I was angry at the way he tried to say you were making a big thing out of nothing. He should have got the revolving door. But thank God, Greg, you were able for him. Thanks for that. Living here doesn't make you Irish. It's not a law of nature that one becomes Irish by living in Ireland. Well, that means, and we're going back to what, you have to be the seventh son of a seventh son of a seventh son. There's an awful lot of people here born in Scotland, born in England. A lot of our parents had to move away for work. We were born in hospitals outside the country and moved back. Are you saying none are Irish? Okay. Regarding Charlie McCullough and his future, we must remember his community are devastated by the defective block crisis, and he sat at a cabinet table which delivered so-called remediation options that do not restore our homes as fit for mortgage purposes. That's a very serious failure, they say. Good morning, Greg. Katie Taylor, the Warrior, one of Ireland's greatest sports people. And yeah, she's up there, certainly in terms of boxing. I mean, there were some brilliant nights with Steve Collins and Barry McGuigan and a few others. But I think even beyond that, what she's done on a world stage, that's women's boxing. There used to be like, you know, like some Muhammad Ali's daughter and a couple of others that would get involved in, you know, the occasional fight and what have you. It was more of a spectacle. Katie had to pretend she was a fella at times to even box at the amateur level, you know, to get into boxing clubs, if my memory serves me correctly, and had to fight to even be able to compete at the Olympics. So in terms of what she's achieved just outside of Saturday night is massive. Like you, I didn't think Katie Taylor could win her fight on Saturday night. It was a great comeback. However, it appeared to me that she was lucky there was just 10 rounds. She showed signs of tiring at the end and had nothing left in the tank. Another round could have produced a different result. I'm not sure she can repeat this performance. At 38, she's past her fitness peak, whether she realises it or not. Huge respect to Cameron, who fought bravely to the end, even though her face looked like a butcher's apron. We'll see a lot more of her, indeed. And a lot of that was down to a clash of heads and that awful cut she suffered. But Katie Taylor does look tired in fights. And the way she doesn't plait her hair like a lot of the other women boxers do. And it kind of comes out and she's got this sort of style. And I think it's almost deceiving that often she is more in the tank than it might appear. At least that's what I'm starting to think. Other than that, she's just simply not human.